Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Dick Girardi tomorrow. Jordan Rodrigue on the sale of the Panthers tomorrow. Patrick Chambers on Monday. And King KJ tomorrow as well. Play-by-play call of the day, a slice of history for Justin Verlander of the Astros.
Here's the 0-2. Swing and a foul tip into the glove of McCann. That is 7 strikeouts for Verlander and 2,500 strikeouts for Verlander's career. One out in the bottom of the ninth. Becomes the 33rd player in Major League history with 2,500 strikeouts.
Amazing. He's had a great career between the Tigers and the Astros. Justin Verlander reaching a milestone with his 2,500th career strikeout last night. All right. Let me talk with one of the really great golf writers out there, Jason Sobel. For years, he's been at ESPN. Now he's with ActionNetwork.com. The NBA Combine's going on. There are going to be a lot of players, when it's all said and done, that opted early for the NBA draft that are not going to be picked. There are only 60 picks. Same story, of course, happened with college football. And to understand the draft, I think you have to have a different thought process about the NFL draft and about the NBA draft. And that is as follows. If you notice, the NFL draft is divided into 3 days. First round, second and third round, then rounds 4 through 7. Well, that actually fits in with what I think the mindset is in the NFL. And that is this. If you are picked in the first 3 rounds, you have to play yourself out of the league. If you're picked in the first 3 rounds, the odds are very high you're going to get that second contract, which is critical. And I think it's like 86-87% of first, second, and third round picks are still in the league 4 years later. Now let's flip it to the other side. If you're picked in the third day, rounds 4 through 7, or you're a free agent, now it's opposite. You've got to play your way into the league. If you're a first, second, or third round pick, you've got general managers, I think, that are willing, because they invested a pick in you that high, they're willing to give you more of the benefit of the doubt, give you more time to see if you were worth it. I'll give you great examples of first-round pick. Nelson Aguilar. Aguilar really struggled. And then this year, Aguilar really took off. If he had been a fourth-round pick, I don't think he would have been a Philadelphia Eagle this year. But because he was a first-round pick, you know, of course, you get the guaranteed contract, but he was. And that is something to keep in mind for underclassmen. Underclassmen get advice from the NFL scouting service. And a lot of them don't take it. Because, look, you know, they've always been the hot shot. They've always been the big deal. They've got great confidence in their own. Okay? They got great confidence in their own ability. But since 2013, underclassmen, 114 have gone in the first round, 91 second round, 61 third round. So far, so good, right? Fourth round, 50, 36 in the fifth round, 26 in the sixth round, 32 in the seventh round. Oh, and 182 of them went undrafted since 2013. This year led all undrafted players. 40 underclassmen were not picked, most ever. And 47 went in rounds 3 through 7. Now, again, I think you're a third-round pick. You're in pretty good shape. But in that league, if you're one of the first three rounds, I think you have to play your way out of the league. But in your rounds 4 through 7 or an undrafted free agent, you have to play your way into the league. Same thing with basketball. If you're a first-round pick in the NBA, you have to play your way out of the league. If you are a second-round pick or you're not drafted, you have to play your way into the league. And by that, I mean the key is to get that second contract. Okay? LSU leads all schools with underclassmen going pro with 34. There are so many LSU players that are underclassmen that are 6th, 7th, or undrafted free agents. I mean, not all 34 LSU players were first, second, and third round picks. Several did not get drafted. Florida is next with 25. Florida State, 23. Alabama, 21. Alabama's got a pretty good success story. When somebody goes pro early, they usually get in a pretty good slot. Ohio State, 21. They've had some pretty good success, too, with underclassmen turning pro and getting drafted a good spot. Clemson, 20. USC, 19. Notre Dame, 15. Stanford, 15. And Oklahoma, 14. And that's the number of underclassmen that have gone since 2013 from those schools. But there have been several misses along the way. Now, look, there are certain guys next year that you expect have got to be thinking about turning pro, like Ed Oliver of Houston or Rashawn Gary of Michigan, somebody like that, a Greg Little at Ole Miss. I mean, those are guys they've got to seriously think about. If they have the similar level of success or even better this year, they've got to go early. Saquon Barkley going early is a no-brainer. But they've got to do a... I don't know what you can do here. Because the NFL Advisory Committee is blunt with these guys. They tell them first round, second round, or go back to school. They do not tell them that they're a 3 through 7 round pick. They don't tell them that. They tell them to go back to school. First round, second round, go back to school. And remember, their reputations as an advisory board are on the line. So they're not there to sweet talk you. Like I said, when it comes to the draft, you don't have the Rams going up to Ed Oliver of Houston saying, "Hey, come on out, we'll pick you." They don't know what they're going to do. It's a draft. They don't need to convince you of anything. You get selected, you sign. So the NFL is not going to sit there and have its advisory board sweet talk these guys. They're going to be saying, look, you're first. And it doesn't mean they're perfect. Obviously, they're not perfect. I mean, nobody drafted Kurt Warner. Arena League, NFL Europe. I mean, Adam Vinatieri, for goodness sakes, as a kicker, was an NFL Europe guy. Okay. So, I mean, you know, they missed two. There's no doubt that the advisory board misses. There's no doubt general managers miss. How many first-round picks over the years have been missed? I mean, you go to the infamous Mike Mamula pick. but they're often more right than they're wrong. And, you know, it's interesting is that a lot of these guys go, the way the rules are structured, and this is why I want to get Phil Savage back on the show. Phil Savage, brilliantly, and you know the high opinion I have for Phil. Very, very high. The two Phils, Phil Savage and Phil Steele. Can't talk to Phil Steele enough, can't talk to Phil Savage enough. Phil Savage runs the Reese's Senior Bowl. And I've said for decades, I've been here for decades. I know I've been around that long. But I've said for decades that if there's one all-star game a player needs to get into, it is the Senior Bowl. And the Reese's Senior Bowl is where NFL coaching staffs come in, and they're all there. It's important. I think they need to dovetail that with an underclassman day. And then after underclassman day, then, you know, that was have an underclassman combine couple days, like an underclassman combine in conjunction with the Reese's Senior Bowl, where it expands the time where players can make a determination whether they should stay in the draft or not. And I think they need that. To help them make better decisions. Which then dovetails with the next part. I think if you go undrafted, they're right. I mean, the Rice Commission was right. You're undrafted, you can go back to school in college basketball. Football should adopt the same rule. I know that creates numbers problems for schools. I know that. But believe me, there's ways to do it where you're smart about this thing. It does put more pressure on them with numbers. I understand that. But I also think that if you get drafted and don't like where you're drafted, you should be allowed to go back to school. It's your option, your choice. That's me. I think that puts more... If you're giving players more options at this level, that puts more pressure on the leagues to take what you do seriously. Because right now, I mean, the NFL has everything their own way. The NBA has everything their own way. We're talking about one-and-dones in the NBA. I mean, I heard Adam Silver the other night. Oh, I mean, we hear them. You can hear them all you want. What's the incentive for you to do it? There's no incentive. What's the incentive for the NBA to let high school kids play? What's the incentive? None. NBA scouts do not want to go to high schools. NBA scouts do not want to go to AAU games. NBA scouts do want to go to Duke and North Carolina, not because it's a great game, but because with some comparable competition out there, they can scout 3-4 guys right away and get a pretty good feel and read for what's going on. Plus, they can call a guy like Mike Krzyzewski, or they can call Williams, and they can, you know... And they can talk to them. He said, hey, tell me about your kid. And Roy Williams will tell him right away, you know, like this, 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 and this. Okay, could be an issue here, here, and here. Whatever. You know. And Krzyzewski, of course, you can call him and say, tell me about Bagley. And, of course, with the combination of the NBA and USA Basketball, Krzyzewski's been closely tied in with it. So he's got enough people in there. He's going to give honest answers to them as to what their guys can and can't do. Same thing with the NFL. What's their incentive? So if you want to do more for the student athlete, give them a little bigger window to deal with. And this, the Reese's Senior Bowl, by having a junior combine that lasts a couple of days there with all the pro people there. Right? That Reese's Senior Bowl occurs 3 weeks, 2 weeks, about 2.5 weeks after the national championship game. So that means that people can delay their decisions an extra 10 days. And it's still before the late signing period. And some guys are just bound and determined to go. I can tell you right now, Tony Carr was bound and determined to go on the NBA side. Bound and determined. I knew in January. You know, we all did. Like, this is going to be it. Because he was bound and determined he was going to go that route. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
All right, great to have you with us. The NBA Combine in Chicago today. Tony Carr has been playing this afternoon, as a matter of fact. And I see. I'm just trying to take a quick look. Here we go. Tony's on Team 2. Howard Eisley, Ronald Norrod, and Mike Pelasco are the coaches. He's playing with Devontae Graham of Kansas, Jalen Barford of Arkansas, Brian Bowen of South Carolina, Hindu Jello of Kentucky, Chris Wilkes of UCLA, Kevin Harvey of Texas Arlington, Kevin Herter of Maryland, Brandon McCoy of UNLV, Omari Spellman of Villanova, and Ray Spalding of Louisville. Those were his teammates. There you go. So that's who Tony, those are the teams Tony's playing, the guys Tony's playing with. But they're like, I mean, here are some of the other guys who were invited to this thing of note. Javon Carter, Rawls Atkins, Dante DiVincenzo of Villanova, Trayvon Duval of Duke, Jacob Evans of Cincinnati, George King of Colorado. A lot of these guys I've seen play in person. Caleb Martin of Nevada, DeAnthony Melton of USC, Johnson of Missouri State, Billy Preston of Kansas, Azubuike from Kansas. I mentioned Tony's team already. Devon Hall of Virginia, Cody Martin, Nevada, Malik Newman of Kansas, Josh Okogie of Georgia Tech, Landry Shamet of Wichita State, Gary Trent of Duke, Carson Edwards of Purdue. He got an invite. Melvin Frazier, Tulane. Canote from West Virginia, the big man. P.J. Washington, Kentucky. Austin Wiley from Auburn. And the other team, Jalen Hands of UCLA. Giannis's brother got invited from Dayton. Adekopo. Shake Milton of SMU. I've seen him play. Anfernee Simons of IMG Academy. Alonzo Trier. Arizona, Tyrus Battle of Syracuse, Dante Mayton from Georgia, Mikhailik from Kansas, Williams from TCU, Theo Pinson from North Carolina, and Bruno Fernando from Maryland. So those guys that got invited. It's not bad. And those are the ones that are going to have the best shot at getting drafted, the ones that are on that list. So, now, if you notice that who's not on that list, okay, who's not on the list? Michael Porter Jr., DeAndre Ayton. I mean, the top, I mean, you notice there's no Mikal Bridges, there's no Miles Bridges, there's no Jalen Jackson. You know, those guys are not on these lists. Okay, so just, you know, be careful with it. Yeah. You know, Trey Young, not on there. They're not going to risk anything except going to the combine, getting measured, and leaving. I mean, that's going to be the extent of it. And the kid from Slovenia, who says, "You know what? I might not go to the NBA this year." Okay. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Jason Sobel on Tiger Woods, the sport of golf. Playing on the PGA Tour next half hour as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Dick Girardi is going to join us on the show tomorrow, and we'll talk about the Preakness with him. Patrick Chambers, Penn State basketball coach, on Monday. So we have a lot going on. About to get Jason Sobel, the senior golf writer from ActionNetwork.com, and talk with him about the PGA Tour coming off the Players' Championship, which will go back to a March start next year. It's going to be the PGA Championship. Moving into this spot next year, we'll get into that with him in just a few moments when he's on. And looking forward to talking to him about that. Webb Simpson, of course, won the Players, an impressive number, and Tiger made a charge. Barely made the cut, and then once he made the cut, he started cutting through the field. Got himself, I think he got himself to second place at one point, and he finished 11th, something like that. He played the front nine really well all week. He played the back nine most of the week. And this week, the stop is the Byron Nelson in Dallas. Then next week's the Colonial. And Tiger did say today he's going to play the Memorial. He's going to play Jack's tournament in Dublin, Ohio, as the PGA schedule starts to migrate north. Well, the talking earlier about the about opening the door for underclassmen. It's tough when you've got confidence in your game, where you've succeeded in almost every single level. But as Bill O'Brien has said before, I think Bill may have said it on the show, as a matter of fact. He said, look, the jump from high school to college is gigantic. He said, the jump from college to the NFL is a chasm. I think you need to give them as much information as possible. It's where I do give the NBA credit. They used to be, when the combine was over with, you had to declare, I want to say, within a week or so about whether you're going to stay in the draft or not. Now they give you till like June 10th or 11th. They give you a little more time where the combine's over, you have some individual workouts, and they give you the opportunity to get as much information as possible. That's where I think a junior combine at the Reese's Senior Bowl would be invaluable to giving underclassmen just a little more information so they can end up making as solid a decision as possible. Jason Sobel joins us from ActionNetwork.com. Jason, it's great to have you with us. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me. Good afternoon to you.
It's good. It's great to talk to you right before I'm going to try and give it a shot with nine holes because it's going to pour here the next couple of days. So, all right.
I know exactly what you're going through. I'm in Orlando. We've been rained out for a week. I had 2 weeks on the road, came home. All I wanted to do was play golf, and we're getting nothing but rain.
Nothing but rain down there. I've got to ask you, that next year will be the big change in the schedule where the players will go to March. PGA will go into this spot next year. How anxious are you to see how this is going to work?
I think it's going to work very well. I mean, there shouldn't really be any surprises. We kind of understand what it's going to be. I know some of my colleagues from other places were tweeting this week about the weather in Bethpage, New York, and the fact that it was mid to high 50s and raining out there as well. And saying, you know, if we get the same weather next year, that maybe it won't be very good for a PGA championship. But look, you're going to have weather situations, or at least potential weather situations, on any given week. It can always rain out. It can always be too cold, too hot, too windy, whatever the case. So I don't think that's going to be a huge sticking point for the PGA championship. I like the Players' Championship. Playing in May over the past 7 years, I just think TPC Sawgrass plays better as a fast, firm golf course under hotter conditions. But look, if you move back to March, it's certainly going to be playable. It's going to be a very good tournament, and I don't have a problem with it. And I certainly think that it works well within the schedule. The only problem I see, Steve, is that we get to mid-July, and all of a sudden we're through all four major championships, and we're like, that's it. We're done.
Exactly, and the only reason I can think of is the NFL influence. But the Ryder Cup does very, very well every other year in ratings, even during the middle of an NFL season.
That's the only one that can avoid sort of the crush of the NFL. The Ryder Cup is immune to any other media coverage, any other a fan base because it's such a big event. But the President's Cup is not immune to it. The President's Cup kind of falls right in that same window, week 4, 5, 6 of the NFL season, whatever it might be, and really doesn't take away the market shares from the NFL at all. And you could really say the same thing about the FedEx Cup playoffs. I always kind of scratch my head at the fact that Tim Finchem, the previous PGA Tour commissioner, when he first introduced the FedEx Cup in 2006, said, hey, we understand our place in the sporting landscape. We have to get out of the way of NFL football. And then what did? They created the playoff system, which finishes opposite the first couple of weeks of the NFL season. It doesn't make any sense to me.
No, it doesn't. And by the way, when you mention weather, when they say it was 50 at Bethpage, why is it everybody sits back here and loves to watch the British Open? Weather stinks there. We all know that.
Yeah, and I think what we've come to understand is, look, there's a little bit different mentality for each of these four majors. And people always ask me, Steve, what major do you like the best? Which one gets it right? Is it the U.S. Open where it should be a winning score close to par? Is it the British Open where they have the weather every day? And, or is it PGA where guys can make birdies? Or the Masters where it's set up as a tough course, but 1 or 2 days, it's a little bit easier? I said, yes. I said, that's why they're all different. You know, this is why we have variety. This is why we have four major championships. If all the four majors were exactly the same, it would be pretty boring.
Absolutely agree. You have to have a different test every time out at the major level, and the four majors give you that test. I mean, when it's all done, you've had a well-rounded golf experience to find out who's the top golfer of the year. Fair enough?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That sums it up well.
Okay, now, Jason, obviously you're going to get asked a lot about the Tiger Woods effect, but before we get to that, it's been an interesting year with Woods, obviously. Mickelson's won. Webb Simpson just won. Bubba Watson's won a couple of times. It's not, and you and I both know the young guns are really, really good on this tour. I mean, American golf's in great shape for a long time with some of the people they have out there. How interesting has it been for you to see some of the, quote, old guard say, hey, we're still here?
I think it's great. In fact, I've been saying for years that if Tiger was able to come back and if Phil Mickelson was able to keep himself in good shape and good health and still playing well, that we could be getting into a sort of golden age for the game where for 3, 4, 5 years the game is really, really fun to watch. You've got dads on a Sunday afternoon sitting on the couch rooting for Tiger and Phil, and sons sitting right next to him rooting for Ricky and Jordan. I think that's really cool. I think that's really fun if that happens. And it feels like maybe this is sort of the beginning of that. Maybe there's some longevity here where we kind of obviously know that Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy and Justin Thomas and Ricky Fowler, they're going to be good for a long time. They're not going anywhere. So I guess the biggest variable in this is Tiger and Phil. Phil certainly looks like on any given week he can go out there and contend at any golf tournament. And Tiger's getting there. I am very impressed with what Tiger has done in his 8 starts back from his fourth and latest back surgery. For him to get back this quickly and to be playing this well, I think speaks volumes about what he's been able to do with his game. So if this continues, like I said, I feel like it's almost a golden age for the game, that we've got this cross-generational rivalry going on, and on any given week we can see guys who are in their 40s and guys who are in their 20s kind of going at it toe-to-toe on Sunday on the back nine of the championship.
I don't know about you. I didn't really know what to expect from Tiger Woods at all. And I've been pleasantly surprised that so many elements of his game have come together the way they have. I give him tremendous credit for it. What have you, and he's been very cautious with the media about where he is. What have you thought about where he is, but also how he's handled it?
Well, first of all, I'll take the second part of that first. He's handled it tremendously. I think that Tiger has become more open, more honest. He is more truthful with how his game is progressing than he would have been 10 years ago. It's just whether it's a maturity, whether it's just a need for everyone to sort of like him a little bit more, I don't know. Maybe he was just sort of sick and tired of having that steely-eyed demeanor and being closed up all the time. Maybe he just wants to open up a little bit more. So, first of all, I've been very impressed with kind of how much he's talked about his progress and how honest he's been. I mean, this is a guy who used to say, I'm only here for one thing, and that's to win this week, and that's it, and nothing else suffices. And now he says, look, it's part of the process, and I'm trying to play a little bit better every week, and I'm frustrated when I don't play well, but I'm still mindful, and I understand that it's not going to happen with every shot. It's not going to happen every round. It's not going to happen every golf tournament. And I think that the fact that he understands this process is very, very important, that he didn't get back out here and try to win and think he could win right away. And he's come close so far. These are all steps in this comeback. At some point, I think, Steve, it's pretty inevitable now that he is going to win. I don't know if he's going to win a 15th major championship, but he is good enough right now to go out there and win golf tournaments. And at some point, it's going to happen. I think it's inevitable, and I think that those who still like to sort of hate on Tiger Woods and think that he's washed up and can't do it anymore, well, you've got another thing coming pretty soon, because it's going to happen. And quite frankly, I wouldn't put it past him in his next start at the Memorial Tournament just a few weeks from now.
And that course suits him, too. I mean, Jack's course at Dublin suits his game. But you and I both know, Jason, that part of the lure of a guy like Tiger Woods is also part of the lure of a LeBron James. You have a segment of the population that is rooting for him to win. There's a segment of the population that is curious because of how great he is. And there's a segment of the population that watches because they want to watch him fail.
Yeah, there's absolute truth to that. And I would just say that I think there's probably fewer people rooting for him to fail right now. I think that when you're dominant, people get used to it. People say, oh, Tiger again, I'm just sick of it. The same way people are sick of the New England Patriots. There are a lot of people out there who are fans of the team and say, of course I want them to keep winning. Everybody else says, I'm sick of them. Let's move on to the next era already. And instead of recognizing greatness while we're sort of in that moment, people want to move on too quickly. And I think that people wanted to move on from Tiger a little bit when he was in his prime and playing his best golf. Can we get another guy to play good too? Can we have someone else winning these majors, not just Tiger all the time? Now that he hasn't won a major in 9 years and 11 months, I think a lot of people look at him and say, boy, I really want to relive the glory days. I want to see the Tiger who was able to go to the U.S. Open and beat the pants off these guys. And maybe it'll happen because if and when it does, he's got a lot more people, I think, rooting for him now maybe than he did even back then 10, 15 years ago.
I absolutely agree with that answer, Jason. Exactly. I want to ask about the Supreme Court ruling because the PGA Tour lined itself up early on with the NBA and Major League Baseball, and they've been going to legislatures and talking to them about that. And if I recall correctly, you can correct me which one it is. Was it FanDuel or DraftKings? I think it was DraftKings that they were that had an arrangement with at one point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So where's the PGA Tour stand in this? Because I was watching a piece on TV last week, and they had a five-point plan already laid out. It sounded like it is a tour that's very well prepared.
Yes, absolutely. I actually did a Q&A for Action Network last week with two high-ranking PGA Tour executives who, first of all, surprised me at how open and honest they were speaking about sports gambling in the future as it pertains to the PGA Tour. And this was before, of course, the Supreme Court ruling. And secondly, I was surprised at how prepared they were. I mean, these guys are not just sitting back in an office being reactive. They're being proactive. They had told me they'd been to multiple state capitals already, speaking with legislators, trying to push through what their plan is, what they would like to see. They want it to be federally regulated instead of state regulated. A lot of this is for good intentions because they want a bigger fan base. They think that regulated and legalized gambling will bring more fans to the PGA Tour. I completely agree with that. Part of it is for integrity's sake. I know a lot of people have said that with increased gambling, you might run the risk of having integrity problems, maybe guys throwing around here and there. And they made a great point to me. They said, players can do that now, and we have no way of knowing about it. If and when it becomes legalized and regulated, those red flags will be sent right to us, and we will have an understanding of how and why this is going on and how we can stop it. The third thing, of course, is not quite as genuine, but they stand to make a whole lot of money off of this. And the PGA Tour makes no bones about the fact that they own all of their shot link data. It's proprietary. So I don't know how much you or the listeners know about gambling and golf, but it's a lot more than just, hey, pick a winner on Thursday morning and hopefully by Sunday evening you're cashing the ticket. It is a lot of matchup betting and a lot of live betting. So not only, for example, would you have had Webb Simpson at 100-1 last week at the Players' Championship, but when he's standing on the 17th tee under the new regulations, you might say, okay, I'm going to pick Webb Simpson to either birdie, par, or bogey this hole, and 5 minutes later I'm either making money or losing money, and I will have an instant gratification from that. And, of course, the only way the bookmakers can get those that data is from the PGA Tour because they own it. So the PGA Tour is going to get some sort of fee from all the bookmakers who want to go into this live betting. And even if it's 1%, well, right now, their best guess on the black market gambling is 150 to 200 billion being gambled in the U.S. every year. Well, I have to imagine, look, I don't know that much about it. I have to imagine if it only goes up, I don't know, 10 times. Once it's legalized, all of a sudden we're talking about, what is that? So are we getting into the zillions there? I can't count up all those zeros, kids, but in any case, 1% of that is still a whole lot of zeros coming back to the PGA Tour, which completely explains why they are so prepared and so in favor of the regularized gambling.
Yeah, if it goes up 10 times, it's $2 trillion. I mean, in my neighborhood, that's a big number.
Yes. In Ponte Vedra, their eyes will light up at that number as well.
And see, one of the interesting parts will be essentially what you're talking about would be the equivalent of prop bets. I think that's the loose term that people. If you have the ability to do that on your cell phone while sitting in the stadium course, 17th hole, birdie, hit green, ball in water, as each guy comes up. And see, this is where they're going to make their money. Ladbrokes will tell you, for example, that bets in England of 5 to 25 pounds, those are the ones that now start to accumulate and make them money.
Yes, absolutely. Those make a lot of money. You get guys who are sitting around bored on a Sunday afternoon, people at the golf course. But, of course, what you have to remember is that you need that live data. Even if a sports book is 3 seconds behind, doesn't sound like much, but if you're sitting there next to the 17th green, you're on your phone, you see the ball go into the hole, and you click birdie with a big bet, and the sports book can't keep up with that because they're 3 seconds behind,
right. All
of a sudden they're losing a whole lot of money on this deal. So that's why they need the live data. The PGA Tour owns the live data. The PGA Tour is going to say, hey, come get it. We've got it right here for you. You just got to pay us a little bit. And we're going to take that profit, and we're going to probably change a little bit of the way they market the game and they broadcast the game. The two executives I spoke with admitted that maybe we don't necessarily, you know, see Webb Simpson. Hey, he's 100-1, and now he's 3-1 on Saturday afternoon, and they show the odds and how they've changed. But maybe they do. Maybe that's something we see on national television pretty soon.
And that's where they'll make money off an integrity fee, because, you know, what's the leverage of the NFL right now? We're going to move the Steelers and the Eagles if you don't play ball with us. But if you own the data that people and also casinos need, right, there's your leverage.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. It's exactly
Jason,
true. And the PGA Tour stands to make a huge profit.
Jason, an absolute pleasure. Thanks a lot for the time you gave us today. Love the fact that you're over at actionnetwork.com right now, too. That's working out great. Congratulations on that.
Well, thanks so much. I appreciate you having me on, and hopefully we can speak again soon.
Absolutely, Jason. I look forward to it very much.
Thanks, Steve.
The outstanding Jason Sobel. Actionnetwork.com. We'll wrap up our show in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Well, that was another fun one today. Steve Bornstein joining us to talk about the Preakness from Louisville, from Fox Sports. And Jason Sobel joining us to talk about the PGA Tour. Jason's a great writer. Great writer. Tomorrow, Jordan Rodriguez, Charlotte Observer, on the sale of the Carolina Panthers to Steelers minority owner David Tepper. You know, what's interesting about that story is that Tepper did not put in the highest bid. In fact, Tepper did not even meet the asking price. And he still got the team. He's trusted by the other owners in the league. And not only that, he didn't have to cobble a group of investors together. I kid you not, he paid cash. I kid you not. Hedge fund manager who's worth $11 billion. Well, you could buy a lot of digital media with that.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.